The policy should just talk about what we intend to do. When you start getting into too many details back in DECON, you're never going to be able to meet all those details. And what happens is you've violated your own policy. So your findings will say not following policy that they shared with. So the SOP gives you a little wiggle room.
Rising above the buzz of ultrasonic cleaners and the clanking of stainless steel are the ideas and voices that are changing an industry. You're listening to the Beyond Clean podcast, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are improving our sterile processing world. Each week, we speak with frontline technicians, CEOs, engineers, and entrepreneurs with a common goal: to help you fight dirty every instrument, every time. Whether you're tuning in for education or inspiration, we're glad you did. Now turn on those washers and turn up the volume. It's time to go beyond clean.
All right, clean freaks, welcome back to another episode of the Beyond Clean podcast. You're listening to season 33, Built Different, a season all about training and competencies in sterile processing for SPD techs. I'm your host, Bobby Parker, and joining me as guest, co-star, co-host for the season is Jason Minutillo. Jason, welcome back.
Thanks, Bobby. Again, it's just super exciting to be part of this.
Well, I'm glad that you said yes to the invitation to do this, Jason. I've come to the realization that I'm just not infinitely interesting enough of a person. So I'm glad to have some other experiences on the show. When we got together to start planning and kind of dreaming up what this season would look like, and we talked about auditing, you said, I know the guy that we got to do for auditing. You said, we got to get Jameed on there. What's the story there?
So I know Jameed from, we'll say, long time, probably some, I don't know, it was probably maybe a 3M conference or something, but we got to connecting and found out that we have the same, one of our same mentors that we worked together with. He worked for him in the military. I worked for him in the civilian life. So it was quite funny to see, you know, the small strings and that lead to each other, right? The small threads of life that connect us. But I think very, very similar to him in the sense of you can't know what's happening in a department without verification. You have to audit. You have to have some way of auditing it and be fair towards that audit. So, you know, trust but verify what you're seeing inside of a department. And the only way you do that is through, you know, some sort of standard operating procedure that everyone knows how to operate, creating that role clarity. And I'm excited for him to talk about it because he is a master at this, especially with his company.
Yeah, well, no disagreement there. Small world indeed, especially in the world of SPD. Seems like we're always running into somebody who knew somebody that we worked with or worked for. So same deal for us. We've had Jameed on the show several times, and he definitely is the right guy for this topic. So if you've not heard him speak, definitely stick with us. You're in for a treat to talk about audits and standardization in SPD. We'll be right back.
If you manage device disinfection in your department, you know compliance, efficiency, and savings are non-negotiable. That's where Astra comes in. Astra is the automated ultrasound probe reprocessor designed to support a fast, compliant disinfection workflow at an affordable price. With automated data logging, consumable tracking, and easy-to-follow prompts, Astra helps support compliance with the Joint Commission standards without adding complexity to your workflow. Astra disinfects up to two probes at once with a 16-minute total reprocessing time, helping departments support consistent, repeatable reprocessing practices. Integration is designed to work with leakage testing systems and enables electronic logging of results so documentation is captured as part of each cycle. See why healthcare facilities choose Astra and visit civco.com/Astra for a custom quote today. That's civco.com/ASTRA.
Did you know that AMI Standard 58 for chemical sterilization and high-level disinfection was updated last year? When was the last time you reviewed these standards for compliance in your sterile processing department? At ChemDAC, we believe that compliance isn't just a checkbox. It's critical for team safety. That's why we partner with hundreds of hospitals across the country for continuous real-time monitoring of parasitic acid, hydrogen peroxide, and ethylene oxide, giving sterile processing leaders the data and tools that they need to protect their teams. Across departments of all sizes and functions, ChemDAC is the trusted partner hospitals nationwide rely on for safety, compliance, and peace of mind. ChemDAC, safer workplaces, less risk, next level protection. Visit chemdac.com to learn more. That's chemdaq.com.
From the studios of Healthcare HQ, you're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
And joining us now in studio is Jameed Billingsley, Executive Director of Surgical Services Strategy and Performance at Advantage, a consulting and staffing company, if you're not familiar, in the OR and SPD spaces, and just an all-around good guy and a great educator. Jameed, good to have you on the show again. Thanks for saying yes to our invitation.
Thanks for inviting me. One of my favorite things to get with some industry thought leaders and just chop it up a little bit. So I'm excited to be here.
Well, it shows if people spend any time out there on LinkedIn, they see you doing all the conversations with all the people. We've had you on a couple of conferences as well. And always a good time when we talk with you, Jameed. But for those who are maybe, we'll say, either not on LinkedIn yet or just brand new to the industry who haven't gotten to know you, why don't you introduce yourself for us? Tell us what you've been doing in the industry.
Well, thank you for that. My name is Jameed Billingsley. I've kind of spent my career at the intersection of sterile processing and surgery. I'm a Navy-trained surgical technologist. I became a surgical assistant. And then I fell in love with sterile processing when I was teaching surgical assisting and sterile processing and surgical technology. So I'm an educator at heart, and I like helping people. So all of my conversations, no matter if you love what I say or you go like, I don't know about that, they're all aimed at helping you and your department kind of bridge that gap that we have the blessing to identify between what you say you want to do, what the industry says you should be doing, and what you can prove that you're doing. So that's my wheelhouse. And that's where I like to stay and help people.
Well, yeah, it shows, man. And, you know, even going to industry shows, you're often out there on the expo floor speaking in somebody's booth, just, you know, doing some education, trying to give people something practical to take home. And so that has a lot to do with why we invited you to talk about this subject with us today, because of all the episodes we've got, I think this is probably the most meat and potatoes one, like the one that's going to be the most transformative to like make a difference in your department and really take some practical take homes from it. And so, yeah, excited to talk with you about just standardization and expectations and sterile processing today. Now, you build yourself as an educator in the space who wants to give those things, but I know you've got some operational chops as well. You want to give us just a quick underline about like some departments that you've led or how you've come to know so much about, you know, auditing and standard expectations.
Great question. So I have been a plank owner or started two different ambulatory surgery centers. I can actually lead a surgical inventory. I love that. And then I just kind of, as my career grew, I ended up being in charge of five campuses of one of the biggest healthcare systems in Georgia and one of the biggest pediatric ones in the country. And so as I came to consulting, I was like, there's a combination of what I learned in the Navy, what I learned at this large organization and what I learned from working at ASCs, right? And my time in education, I just kind of balled them all up. And so one of the things I love working with, obviously from that ASC background, smaller places, obviously from that background of being in charge of five campuses, I like working at large facilities. So I can kind of do it all because there's no one size fit all solutions. And that's kind of where people get stuck. Right. What they do at this place that has a trauma hospital with 33 operating rooms and 121 cases, that may not fit at the ASC that you're running it, that you're busting your butt to comply. So my kind of superpower is helping people find a solution that works for them at wherever they're practicing. So that's kind of my favorite thing to do. Like there's no, here's the answer for everything. This is the answer if small. Here's the answer if you have an educator. Here's the answer, the answer if you're a working manager. Here's the answer if you're a director or a VP. So that's kind of where I like to help people.
Yeah, man. And I understand that you and Jason already know each other pretty well as well, right? Jason, you guys do some AMI stuff together?
We do AMI stuff together. Jameed and I have connected on other, we'll say, initiatives for other health systems. We have a former mentor together. We've been everywhere.
You know, if you go back, Jason, we were on like one of those product, we met on one of those product things. So we've known each other for a while. So it's great to see really both of you guys, right? I've known both of you guys and you guys have both grown in this industry. So it feels great and comfortable to talk to some guys who've really lived it, right? Like you, been at the front line and moved up. And so I think that's going to make for a great conversation.
Yeah, I agree. We're excited to dive into it. So why don't you get us started here, Jameed, and talk to us just, you know, this episode is titled The Case for Standardization and SPD. Just at the level of definitions, what do we mean when we talk about standard procedures or standardization in sterile processing?
That is a great question and a great opportunity for us to separate three different things that often get confused, right? So let me answer your question this way. Your SOP or your standard operating procedures is how you do what you stated in your policy. Your SOP is not your policy. Your policy is a statement of intent. This is what we intend to do, and these are the outcomes that we are pursuing. If your policy has SOP language in it, you can paint yourself in a corner, right? Whereas your SOP can talk about best practice stuff that you do that's beyond industry standards and requirements, but this is what we do at our facility. And then another thing that sometimes gets confused in there is orientation and competency, which are two separate other things that are separate from the policy. Your SOP, your competencies here, your policy is what you intend to do. Your SOP is how you do it. Your competency is proof that I can do it. Your orientation is preparation for competency. So your orientation is not competency. You can't say, yeah, Bobby been here 6 weeks. He's competent in everything. Well, how did he get oriented to this stuff before he just came in competent in it? So those kind of four terms always get kind of mixed mashed. And you know what? The surveyors, the accreditation surveyors can help you sort that out. So you kind of want to sort that out before you get to that point or before somebody, you know, calls the social media, the news or whatever on you. Make sure you understand the intent of all those different things because they're not the same and they require a different level of attention to detail.
Yeah. Thanks for that clarification. And a lot of facilities just have some kind of competency on the books and some kind of policy binder. And that's it. You know, orientation is like, just read our policies and try to figure it out. And then we'll check you off on your competencies. And then SOPs, like you said, kind of leak into the policies a bit. Yeah. If you've got a policy that's like super hyper specific, that's really tied your hands to it, even naming specific products in the policies is one of those.
Yeah. You don't want to do that. Even in your SOP, you don't want to do that because it's hard enough to make an SOP. You don't want to have to change it seven times a year when you stop using this kind of biological and that kind of stuff. So that's a good point out, a common mistake we make in those documents.
Well, you just kind of led into my next question there. As you know, so not all SOPs are created equally. So what's the difference between one that actually gets used, one that actually works, one that, you know, doesn't sit on the shelf in that binder, we'll say?
That's a good question, Jason. So the ones that don't get used are the ones that you copy and paste from the place that you worked before, or you copy and paste from an AIME document.
Right.
Or you copy and paste from AI learning engine. Those are hard to use because they can't be custom to what you do. And in fact, if your SOP is not custom to what you do, you're setting yourself up for failure. One of the things that we kind of talk about is when you're a new manager, whether the place has been alive for a million years or it's just a brand new construction, before you go in there and start tearing everything down and asking people why they're doing this thing, go back and look at the policy, then look at the SOPs, then look at the orientation, and then look at the competency. What you're likely to find is the thing that you're like, why aren't they doing that? It's not mentioned anywhere, right? Yeah. So that's how you have to make sure they are aligned, not the same, but aligned so that you don't paint yourself into a corner or you don't miss anything. And the best way for me to do the SOP is I call it like a SOP by rounding. So go ahead, copy that old SOP, copy the AIME standards, use AI, put it in there, and then challenge it, right? Let's walk the walk and see, does this work? This is saying, put the carts through the cart washer. We don't have a cart washer. So this is not applicable to what we do. And in fact, this whole line of things that we do is not here, but we have to mention, well, how do we make sure that the carts are clean between patient uses? So those are the, you know, kind of walking the instrument cycle all the way through, right? Don't stop at the OR. Go all the way over to L&D. I know it's in another building. You have to take off your scrubs, put on a different, whatever. It's still in your scope of responsibility. So you can't have a SOP or a policy that says something is happening in one of your customer sites that you can't prove is happening.
So what you would say is trust but verify.
Very much so. Very much so. And you know, like that, when you start a SOP, it should be written in pencil. You can't go like, yep, guys, I went home. Here's the SOP for you guys. Here you go. Go through all the steps. Double check to see if there's a competency for this step that you want to happen. We need to add to our competency. We need to add training. Oh, this needs to be annual training. Oh, no, this is very complex and we keep making this mistake. We need to do this every quarter. So those kind of decisions are made before you just kind of plop it down on them or have this kind of SOP that you just pull out when the surveyors come around.
So, Jameeb, what you're describing sounds like a pretty robust system that a lot of listeners probably don't have built out today. If they've just got, you know, some policies set up, can you give us maybe some practical examples of what it would look like to have SOPs in your department of, you know, the difference between a particular policy and SOP and like how robust are these? Like, do we need documentation for every step of every process we do? Like, how do you decide what these standard procedures should look like?
Man, that's a good question. So the policy should just talk about what we intend to do. When you start getting into too many details back in DECON, you're never going to be able to meet all those details. And what happens is you've violated your own policy. So your findings will say not following policy that they shared with us. So the SOP gives you a little wiggle room, right? And so the best way to start an SOP is if it starts getting too long, that's not an SOP anymore. Like, all right, let's walk through the steps. What the SOP is not, that's why competencies and training are different things. The SOP is not to teach you how to do it. The SOP is like, okay, you complete the competency. So I am going to hold you accountable for all those things in that competency. So the SOP is just going to talk about the key points, the key steps, what steps that match scans. If you have an instrument tracking system that we can track, run, do KPIs on, and that we want to happen every time. It's just like the old thing about this, Jason and Bobby, the IFUs for flexible scopes, right? If you're kidding yourself, you're like, I want Bobby to go through and do all 139 steps, right? Can you use your clinical judgment to say, these are the 10 steps that has to happen every time we do this? That's a SOP, right? Not a first, put on PPE. Second, put on goggles. Third, tie up your shoes. Fourth, get a drink of water. Right. Fifth, walk to the sink. So when you start burning SOPs out, those people can't use them, right? So we already have training. So the first step, make sure you're fully done your PPE. Check the solutions. See, those are the kind of things you put in your SOP. Check all solutions before the thing. You can't put that in a policy because guess what? You're saying every single person who's at work now is going to check the solutions. We don't need all that. We need the things that you want to happen. And particularly, Jason, I like to look at which things have we missed here or where I've been. And let's make sure we put those things in an SOP. So that's a part of the expectations here. And I like this. When it starts getting beyond 10 steps per area, I start going, is this necessary? Is this final elsewhere in the competency? Is this already in the policy? And that's how I determine the SOP. I want it to be a handy dandy look like I'm a traveler. I haven't worked here. What are the stuff they do here? Oh, they ultrasonic all of the cardiac, neuro, and ortho trace. That's an SOP thing. That's not a policy thing. That's not a competency.
So for your example of the flexible endoscope, then it would still be the expectation that they follow the IFU, that they work through 139 steps, but we don't need to turn the SOP into just a direct copy of that IFU with all of them called out in there.
Bingo.
In a facility that I was in, there was a steam sterilization SOP, and it literally called out which direction to turn the handle to open the sterilizer door. Turn it clockwise or counterclockwise. So yeah.
Yeah, that's counterproductive at that point, Bobby. And to Jameed's point, I mean, that's, again, going back to the trust but verify, walking the processes. So, when you have to look at the bigger picture, you can't just sit there and say, cool, do all the minutiae steps. Otherwise, you're not doing it correctly. And that's where, back to Jameed's point, there's policy, there's SOPs, there's, orientation and competency. So with that being said, Jameed, do you recommend having, frontline staff walk those SOPs? Is that part of your, or would be your recommendation to do a trust but verify process and having frontline staff walk it?
It's so many benefits to involving the frontline staff in this whole process, right? So you don't want to just dump it on them. Here you go. Write the SOP. Here you go. You're going to write our self audit document, but involving them, first of all, great way to capture your complaining ones, right? The ones that are like, they should know this. Well, make them a part of they, and they start realizing, oh, we have to go back and identify this and then train to it. But really, when your team knows, they do the work. They know some of the gaps. And so if you don't involve them, they're either going to be like, good, they didn't say this. They don't say we should have to do this hard thing that we don't like doing, or they're going to be like, see, that Jason doesn't know what he's doing because he didn't pull down the flimogan and do a half circle. And so when you involve them, they start saying, well, did you say about this? And did you know that the elevator, when you hear the ding, you have to go to the elevator? And you're like, I didn't even know that because I don't work back here like you work back here. And they're just going to have so much to inject that you want to have as a part of your SOP, as a part of your kind of audit pathway. And I think self-auditing, one of my sayings that people are free to steal is you don't want the first people to see your department, to audit your department, to be the accreditation surveyors, right? So the more you can self-audit, do rounds with IP, see if you can find a hostage from the OR to do it. One of the things, hey, ask one of your customers, like the labor and delivery, because they'll see things that you don't see, or they'll bring, like, up in labor and delivery, we do this, but also they start gaining a greater appreciation for the process and how it happens. And the same thing for your team. Sometimes your team is like, I'm just concentrating. I'm assigned to neuro trays today. I'm here to do neuro trays. But we start doing those rounding processes and letting them contribute to the SOP, they'll start realizing, oh, priority trays are important. The turnover trays for today are important. The turnover trays for tomorrow. So you start getting buy-in because they feel like this is our SOP, not something that this mean old Jameed laid on us because he came from a hospital that's 15 times the size of ours. And now he's just laying this SOP on us to do them. It's only six of us who work here. Who's doing all this stuff?
Right. Jameed, I want to lift us up out of the weeds for a minute. So I think that does describe well what SOPs look like. But I know you've walked through a lot of departments and just seen what implementing some good expectations and standard procedures can do. Have you got any stories for us of the transformational power of standardization in a department and really what it can accomplish?
Bobby, that's such a great question. And one of the things is we think it's big differences from department to department, but in reality, there's differences from what first shift thinks they should be doing, second shift, third shift, and especially the weekends. And so if you don't have an SOP, I can kind of, listen, buddy, Bobby, you've been here for 3 months. I've been here for 14 years and I might be, still stuck in the same position, but I know what I'm going to do. And I don't know what you want me to do. SOPs really can help you speak that language of, here's what I think we should be doing. Here's what we're all focused on. And so the work is sometimes different. My shift has to do all the sterilizer testing and the washer testing and all. That's okay. My shift is the busiest shift that's responsible for doing the most trays. My shift is more accountable to the service line coordinators and the OR nurses upstairs. But when we all have that kind of standard purpose that an SOP can give you, you can tell it's a big difference because everybody is focused on that same goal line. Whereas when you don't have an SOP or you have a policy, and it can be a good policy, that doesn't tell you how we're going to get this accomplished. And everybody is doing it a different way. And even to the point where people working on the same shifts, you're like, why are you doing this way? And it's this is within policy, and they might be right, because if you have that vacuum of an SOP, it doesn't really give you, this is how we're going to do it every time we do it.
I love the way you said that, because it definitely alludes to, I mean, you can have great policy, but if you don't have a standard operating procedure, creating that role clarity, you're lost in the weeds. And then more importantly, you could be in policy with one person, but out of policy with another, but it's still in alignment with Amy. Right. And so you're now down a real path and a real can of worms gets opened up. So I appreciate the way you said that role clarity is key. It's absolutely key.
So. Jameed, you mentioned auditing as well, and that standardization gives you kind of the permission and the ability to audit yourself rather than having the auditor come in. Like, you now have a set of expectations that you could hand even to, somebody from outside the department or to another technician to go around and say, let's just take a look and see if we're actually doing the things that we say that we're going to do. As you encourage departments to start doing their own self-auditing, how much do you audit and how do you decide which processes to audit? Is it everything all at once or do you start somewhere?
You start with little bites. You don't start trying to boil up the ocean. So you start with little bites, right? So I want you to audit the construction of these trays that are kicking our butts. Just those trays. Not a decon. We're going to have somebody else to do the decon. We're going to have somebody else look at the point of use and transportation. We're going to have somebody else look at the storage so we can see why we keep having so many holes in these same trays. And so when you start giving people smaller bites, that feels like something that they feel confident and competent to do. And then they start wanting more. They're like, yeah, I'm good. I have this assembly site now. Can I go back and do decon? And so it really kind of empowers them, because I can tell you, the best way to figure out if your manager or director made a dumb idea is if you allow people the agency to comment on it, to audit. They can go and say, you said in your SOP we want to do this, but the way these things come out and then how we have to put them, we actually can't do that. And you're like, I thought we could do it. No, we can't do it because we don't have enough people or too many trays come out at the same time. Or these trays are add-ons. So when we say we're going to do this on every tray, we can't execute that. And so you want to find that out, because I think all three of us have been in our office going, why aren't we complying with this? And we never gave anybody a chance to say, hey, this is not working. and they can show you an audit. And you know, you see right here, we can't do this because we have to, I had a place, we had to dry the case cards. We turned a dry inflection up on the case card no matter what, but it was really the angle of the thing. It wasn't angled high enough to get the, so the dryer was trying to dry standing water out of it. And that wasn't in our SOP. So what was happening was, you know, go like, hey, what's taking so long to pull the case cards? They're like, yeah, all these cars are wet. We're waiting for them to dry. That's an example of walking it around in the audits was there's something wrong here. And that was actually instrumental because we captured how much time we wasted in that. And we said, this is how much money we spend a year drying them, having our skilled people drying or waiting for them to finish drying before we pull case cards. And this is how much a upgraded cart washer would be. So this return on investment is immediate. So those are the kind of things you find out from auditing, like what's the pain points of your team and what can you do as a leader or even a team member to make it better for everybody in the department?
So Jameed, again, it's, you already alluded to it. It's not how you don't boil the ocean, right? You don't eat an elephant in one chunk. You take one bite at a time. So for the department that has zero, nothing, no concept. This is the first time they've heard standard operating procedures. What do you recommend? How do you start? What's the, you know, do you focus on a particular area? Do you, do you choose a problem area? What are your recommendations?
So obviously the best way is to start off with the problem areas, right? Because we want to fix that faster, right? And we want to figure out the SOP. It can be a part of a root cause analysis, right? Because what I like to do is put the best person on there and tell them, just write me 5-10 steps that should be happening every time in this area and pull them off the floor for a couple of hours. Let them go up to Starbucks, get some Starbucks and then kind of think on it. And so then you have somebody who's the second best or the best on another ship. What's missing here? And so really, when you start writing an SOP, pretend like there's no such thing as a policy. There's no such thing as Amy. Just write down what's happening. Then the next step is to kind of run that idea by the standards and by the policies. Like, wait a minute. It says the sky is red here. Our policy says the sky is blue. Those things are incompatible, right? So either we change the policy or change the, and so what you find is you can quickly by letting the people who are the best kind of work on it. And the other thing is here's the biggest tip. Don't ever feel like your SOPs have to be perfect. That's why I love SOPs instead of putting those things in the policy, right? Because you could go 3 months and go, this is not working. All right, let's change number two. Or let's switch number step 5 to step 3. And you don't have to send it through an infection control committee or any of those people. You can just send it through your departmental experts and go, now that makes sense. What you have for, how it's done for the last 3 months. So I would say take a small area. If it's an area that you're struggling with, I would start there, right? Instead of delaying there because you can, as you're getting that SOP written, reviewed, and you talk it out at huddle, you'll start realizing, oh, I see why we keep making this mistake because people are like, no, you don't have to do that. The IFUs don't say that. You know, so you start saying, oh, okay, we need to review the IFUs because we got a significant part of the staff that doesn't even know that's in the IFU. So that may not be in your SOP. That may end up in your competencies and training, but also, you know, you want to equip everybody to do it. And, you know, I would say people who haven't started SOP, you're not writing an AMI standard. You're not writing a policy. You're just telling your staff how to do it and give them the freedom to tell you, this doesn't make sense. And you will quickly get to what makes sense because the key is when somebody new comes along, can they understand what we do at Insert Memorial Hospital or ASC?
Yeah. Yeah, well said. Jameed, I know that there's going to be some follow-up questions on this one for folks who are just navigating their way through SOPs for the first time or have one that's got them stumped that they've, you know, had 50% of the staff on one way of doing things and the other 50% says, no, this is the right way. Like, how do you make an SOP about all of that? If somebody wanted to connect with you and talk further about this with you, what would be the best way to get in touch?
you can contact me on LinkedIn. The spelling of my name is pretty unique. You can reach out to me on Facebook. I may not respond that quickly because I'm not on Facebook. It's just the birthday app now. Like, oh, it's Jason's birthday. Let me say happy birthday to Jason. But you can reach out to me on Facebook or you can contact me directly. Our website, SISurgical.com or AdvancedSupportServices.com. Either one of them will get you to us. Hit the contact us button and we will respond within 24 hours.
Yeah, I love that. Well, Jameed, thanks for the interview today. You gave us a lot to chew on, a lot of practical things to work through, and a good exhortation to, have not only every department knowing what they're doing, but each shift doing things the same way. It's so important. Thanks for joining us on the episode today. Always good to talk to you, bud.
Thanks for the invite. I enjoyed talking to both of you guys.
Good seeing you, Jameed. Glad to talk with you.
Great seeing you.
That was Jameed Billingsley, Executive Director of Surgical Services Strategy and Performance at Advantage, walking us through what a good standard procedures process can do for your department. And, you know, Jason, we didn't get to talk too much about training, which, you know, that's been the theme of the season. But this topic makes so much of a difference when it comes to training. Back when I was a technician, I lived some of the experience of what Jameed talked about of like, okay, you get trained on first shift and then you show up on second shift with like, no, forget what all of those guys told you. This is how we do things on second shift. So like that is a thing for sure. But even beyond that, just like some cultural disagreements about, you know, do we crack the door on the sterilizer or which bay of the three bay sink do we use first and for which purpose? Like things that don't get called out in the policies. If you don't have it written down somewhere, it can just create a lot of challenges in the experience of somebody trying to learn the department. And then even for the ones who have learned it, just some of the friction between technicians who can't seem to get on the same page about what's the way we're going to do things around here. So yeah, I was excited when we put this episode on the list that we were going to talk through for sure. But very satisfied with how we covered it. I think Jameed did a great job of talking about the benefits and merits of having some standardized processes.
That's exactly it. The standardized processes creates that role clarity, not only between shifts, but also if you have oversight of multiple facilities, it creates that standardization. I always tell, my team leaders in, you know, my market and my region, you know, there's the AMI way, there's the SPD way, and then there's how to do SPD the Penrose way or the St. Francis way or the Holy Cross way. And so you have to define what that looks like. Again, that role clarity is absolutely key. You know, again, how we have approached this in our region is, all right, team member at local facility, you know, to Jameed's point, give it to the frontline staff, let them work it, see if it makes sense. And then from there, if you've got buy-in, now you can go ahead and use that to teach the newest person coming on or the traveler that's coming in. Because again, we all have, if we have any experience, we have experience elsewhere. That's how you did it at X facility, Memorial, whatever, right? Coming into this facility, again, what is that specific way of doing things? So it just shoots down the friction, as you put it, and shuts down that friction point.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you brought that up. If we had another 10 minutes with Jameed, where I wanted to go with that is like, you know, the argument against standardization, because not necessarily everything has to be in an SOP and standardized. And particularly, you know, every IDN that I know of that has a regional director or a regional educator is talking about standardization, but there's some point that you hit that compromise where it's like, well, we kind of need to let the facilities disagree on what way they want to do this particular topic. And like, how do you navigate what you choose not to standardize? You got any advice for us on that one? Just looking from a regional perspective?
Absolutely. So we have a steering committee and that's kind of, and we alluded to that in a previous episode with my regional SPD manager. But, you know, we stand up a steering committee, and it's now the leaders at each facility to determine what we're going to talk about for standardization, right? And we may not come to an agreement, right? But we're going to come to a consensus, and that's what we're going to go ahead and standardize on in terms of now there's going to be an SOP on, say, borescopes, right? So we came to group, we're going to have a standard operating procedure of borescopes, but guess what? I'm not writing it. My regional leader's not writing it. You at the local facility are going to write it, and we're going to call it out in our competencies and our orientation documents. So, you know, again, how we do it versus this is how I know you know how to do it. And so that's what we kind of did. So our competencies call out, please refer to your borescope SOP, sign off that, yes, I verbalized or I direct observed or whatever the case may be, but that a specific SOP is now local to that local department.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it. Well, that's going to do it for the amount of time that we've got for today's episode. We're pushing a record time length for the season, and go figure that it was with Jameed that we did. So he's got a lot of wisdom to share. Well, we've still got more coming at you with respect to training and education this season. So we hope we'll catch you next week. But until then, we'll leave you as we always do here on Beyond Clean. On behalf of Jason and myself, keep fighting dirty.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Beyond Clean. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on your favorite podcast app or by downloading the smartphone app on iPhone or Android. Simply search for Beyond Clean in the App Store or Google Play. The best thing about downloading the smartphone app is that you can access bonus content for certain episodes and view episodes in certain categories, like articles on the go and vendor spotlights. Are you following us on LinkedIn or Facebook yet? If you are and you love an episode or post, then let your social network know about it. Like, comment, or share our posts along with your thoughts and keep the conversation going. If you have any topics or guests that you would like to recommend for a future episode, just send us an email to info@beyondclean.net. We look forward to hearing from you.